We had just a sampling of protests that occurred, as you know, over the weekend. There are more than 100,000 people in the street participating in more than 70 different protests around the country, drawing attention to President Trump's zero tolerance immigration policy. And going a bit more than that, but that was the focus of the marches. I thought it was a great show, a show of support, not just for the issue of opposing the so-called policy, but it seemed to suggest that groups were coming together. And that's what I thought was so hopeful about everything. People were organizing themselves and were, in fact, organized around an issue, which was important. But beyond the immediacy of the moment, there was a sense that people were beginning to understand that they had something in common, and there could only be hope that that spirit continues, you know, in the future, because this administration also got a signal that it is not going to be easy to just run roughshod over the people. They will fight back. They will fight back. And what better cause than protecting the rights of individuals who are not able at this moment, because they're all enmeshed in a system that has squirreled them away. They're not in touch with people who can advocate for them. They've been removed not only from their children, but they've also been removed from the process, a process that by international law they are entitled to. They haven't gotten that kind of access yet. So it was a good thing to see these many people out in the street and taking this matter seriously and taking their role seriously, their role as activists. You know, they're very active, and that is what we need to see so much more of. We kind of lost hope there for a while when at the beginning, at the very beginning of Trump's tenure, it seemed that he just overwhelmed everybody and caused people to retreat. And there was concern that maybe, you know, they are intimidated. We are intimidated. We don't have the guts to fight. We don't have the wherewithal to fight. And the opposition also was splintered, not knowing where to go. The leadership was so poor, which was another good thing. This demonstration didn't wait for leaders. This demonstration expressed true grassroots leadership. Because, as you know, we could discuss it, the Democratic leadership we've been talking about for a long time is absolutely messed up. They don't know where they're going, and therefore they can't direct anybody to go where we ought to be going. They're not themselves exercising proactively a level of leadership that people could latch on to. There was a huge vacuum of leadership, precisely at a time that we needed very strong, directed, organized leadership. It just wasn't there. And to my mind, it still isn't there. They're still waiting for something. I don't know what. They're waiting for Nancy Pelosi to get some kind of a divine message as to where people ought to go or where this party ought to go. And that is why it is so gratifying when you see the masses of people way ahead of the leadership. They're not waiting. They understand now that they have power. The power is in their hands. And they ought to direct that power to causes that require people power as a response. This is what is, you know, with all the bravado of a Donald Trump, this weekend, I can assure you, was a wake-up call. The Trump administration is falling apart. People are disgusted. People are resigning. They want out. They did not spend years and years in service only to be embarrassed and humiliated and just misled by a lying president who has no idea what he's doing except that he should control everything himself. He is not a president, a democratic president. He doesn't believe in it. So even his chief of staff is ready to get out of the door, and other cabinet members are considering getting out of the administration. So it's beginning to dawn on him, I think, that he's not the gift he says he is. People are mobilizing now against him, And this issue in particular is worth mobilizing around. So that was a very, very comforting signal that we got over the weekend. When you think about the issue at hand, well, of course, you know, Trump and Jeff Sessions, the U.S. Attorney General, have different interpretations about what is at stake here. And what is at stake here, at least this is what they say, is national security. The borders ought to be secure. We can't just have people, you know, crossing over willy-nilly and not do anything about it. But of course, we know that it is in part a legitimate issue about for any country to be concerned about its borders. But I think when it comes to Mexico and other Central and South American countries, we ought to have a very clear perspective about what is going on, what is causing these mass migrations. And there are many factors involved, but there are also many ways in which the United States has precipitated the crisis. It will not take any ownership of that. It would not recognize it at all. And this goes all the way back to when Mexico included California and Texas and Arizona and Colorado and Utah and New Mexico and Nevada. It all was Mexico. And since that time until now, the U.S. refuses to recognize and acknowledge its role in the disembowelment of Mexico. People don't just wake up one day and decide, oh, I don't want to live here anymore. I'm going to move north. I'm so sorry if you're hearing something that sounds like a buzz, as you know, if you listen to this program regularly. The landscapers and I have a great love affair. Usually they like to start their mowing and their pruning and tree limb cutting just when the program starts, and there's no way to attenuate the noise. So pardon the buzz if you are hearing it. What are we to make of this administration? And what are we to make about the reaction in Congress where the fight ought to be? Now, it's one thing to be very comforted by the fact that more than 100,000 people took to the street. The thing is that they actually became the leadership here. The people have become the leadership. And that ought to be discussed. We have a noteworthy opposition person, Maxine Waters of California, but calling for the impeachment of the president. And, you know, it is annoying to me. You know how impeachment goes. Impeachment doesn't happen when you get up in public in front of microphones, in front of television cameras, and you say, impeach 45. That is not leadership. What is required, as you well know, Ms. Waters, is paperwork. If you, in fact, believe that the president ought to be impeached, that is not something that the people do. That's something the legislators do. It's a legislative action. So rather than yammering all the time about he needs to be impeached, we need to see evidence that some group in Congress is actually crafting impeachment papers, an impeachment articles of impeachment. But we're not seeing that. We're just hearing people talking. And that's not how it gets done. So I would be very, very happy if, until you put together articles of impeachment, until you bring together a core group of legislators moving on the business of impeachment, until there are specific charges and you're making that move to get a vote on the articles of impeachment, please stop that public blather. It makes you look silly. And it really insults the intelligence of the community. I know it makes you look good. It makes you look very feisty. And it makes you look very, you know, brave. But it's, in the end, public relations. And we don't need public relations right now. We need actual work. So if you can't produce articles of impeachment, please shut up. It's very annoying. I've been saying that for quite some time. The only person who has some credibility here in this department is Congressman Al Green from Texas. You remember I shared with you the entire statement he made, the entire tape, when he put forward articles of impeachment. And he came back and did some more. He did a second session on articles of impeachment. Whatever people think or want to think about that, I say he put his money where his mouth is. And he articulated the charges, if you will, on which the president ought to be impeached. Not anybody was standing with this man when he did that. Nobody was there to stand with him to indicate endorsement of his position. So when you could understand now why it is irritating to constantly hear the mantra that the president ought to be impeached, then produce articles of impeachment. If you can't do it, shut up and go away and stop annoying people. This is my attitude, and it's been my attitude about a lot of things when it comes to people who talk and people who do. They want us to confuse the two, and we shouldn't be confused. But I'm getting back now to Donald Trump and his so-called zero tolerance. We should have zero tolerance about a lot of things about Donald Trump. There's so much to direct that principle toward him about. Zero tolerance for corruption. Zero tolerance for nepotism. Zero tolerance for lying. Zero tolerance for a possibly mentally unstable man who still is in charge of this country without any effort at all to ascertain his mental fitness for the job. You know, we have a lot of work to do. And unfortunately, Donald Trump's singular achievement has been to galvanize a wide swath of people who may not have been vocal in their racism. But that doesn't mean they let go of those attitudes. and he's the answer to their prayers. They will suffer, but it doesn't matter because they're getting the psychological reward, and that's where Trump is going. He's hammering at the psychological reward of being racist. Once again, you get to put these people in their place. Once again, you get to just wallow in these racist notions that a little bit had gone to bed, a little bit. Every time he talks about people from Central or South America, every time he talks about Mexicans, it's always negative. These are killers, these are rapists, these are criminals. No such thing. And I do remind you that his grandfather, the first of his lineage to come to the United States, was a very bad example of the kind of immigrant that is desirable in America. Very bad example. Running whorehouses, and according to the documentation, selling drugs and selling suspicious meat in his so-called hotels, which were really hotels. That was the kind of immigrant he was. That's where Trump comes from. His father, still holding on to those Nazi theories and Nazi ways of thinking and acting, excluding people of color from his rental properties, as did Donald Trump himself. You know, he did not come from nobility. I should mention parenthetically that when they met in Quebec for the G7 summit, it didn't get very much coverage, but it was a very loud statement that Prime Minister Trudeau made when he gave Trump a photograph. He presented him a photograph, and the photograph was the property that his grandfather operated in the Klondike region, that's on the border of Canada, and the property was described as the hotel. It was the whorehouse. But he just presented it as a historical a photograph, you know, and you can tell that the subliminal message was quite emphatic. You had Trudeau reminding Trump what his grandfather did up in the nether regions of the border. Well, anyway, what this allows us to do, I mean, the demonstrations occurring, people becoming more and more agitated, people becoming more involved in fighting back, is that that's exactly what we ought to do. That's exactly what we ought to be doing. And on the flip side of the Donald Trump coin, we have to demand from any political entity that allegedly represents our interests, we have to demand that they be present and accounted for. And we have to decide whether we continue to support these, what can I call them, these organizations, or we don't. This is no joking matter now. This is very serious politics. And there's no room for bystanders. You've got to be involved, one way or the other. And you've got to demand a certain level of performance from those political vehicles that allegedly represent our interests. If they don't, cut them loose, or cut yourself loose from them, and proceed on your own. In some way, attaching yourself to a cause or an organization that is actually doing something. We don't have many alternatives, and this is the one thing that comes through with this zero tolerance. The people who are suffering have very few alternatives. This is a major problem, a major lesson that we should learn here. They're stuck. And their support, at least for the moment, was coming from the outside. But as we know, there is a new sheriff in town. Mexico has elected a new president who is said to be left of center, and there are high hopes that the political pendulum will swing in favor of true national leadership. It's a tall order. But whether Andrés Manuel López Obrador will be able to accomplish this, he's a man in his 60s, and people are looking for a rapid and dramatic turnaround in Mexico. That may not be possible. And it may not be possible to the extent that people want it to be possible. He can't achieve all these things at the same time. So he comes in under some serious pressure. And because his politics is left of center, all the more reason for this president of ours to begin to ramp up a new aspect of the fight with Mexico. So we have to anticipate that. Trump loves the idea of destroying people through all kinds of ways. And I'm sure he just can't wait to start the war with Mexico's new president, President Obrador. But if that's his intention, and if that's what he chooses to do, he will have another level of fight that he never expected before. Why? Because the Mexican people were disgusted with their leadership. And they are disgusted with the quality of their lives. There's no reason for people to suffer this way. There's no reason that corruption has run rampant, as it threatens to do so in the United States, reaching into the White House itself. We haven't seen this level of corruption and nepotism and graft and shady dealings. We have never seen that. This administration has brought this entire concept of the presidency being hallowed ground. You don't mess with it. There are certain things you don't do with the presidency. And he has every intention to do whatever it is he wants to do with the presidency. So look for another major onslaught on Mexico and the transferring of the fight from the U.S. beating up the people of Mexico to the U.S. beating up the president of Mexico in order to beat up the people of Mexico. That's what's going to happen. So we ought to keep our eyes peeled on that. I wanted to talk also, this was a very instructive weekend, about the other emergency and crisis that this president has caused and is causing, and that is the end of subsidies to the evacuees from Puerto Rico after the storm, saying that, I believe it's this week, tomorrow they'll go to court to find out whether there could be an extension of the housing subsidies. But the administration intends to just cut it off. They have to figure out how to get their act together, those people who lost their homes. It's not a matter of rebuilding, it's just that the entire house, there's nothing to salvage. And on top of that, they had to leave the island. And so FEMA came in, and because there's money there allotted, just as it was during the Katrina disaster. And so people would get some kind of help. The things that needed to be done, regular people couldn't do. Could ordinary people restore power to the entire island and clean up the mess? No, they couldn't. So it's logical that they ought to be helped in transition, because once they left the island, which was what they were encouraged to do, they left the island, they came to the mainland, many of them, but that did not relieve them of the burden of finding jobs, of still trying to cope with the expenses, because their homes were still there, in tatters maybe, but they still had to see to it somehow. They have to fly back and forth. They have children who still need to go to school. You know, it's a calamity. So the Trump administration decided that they will just end the subsidies to them this week. This is it. You figure out the rest, they're telling the people. We've carried you for 9 months or 8 months or however many months to get you out of Puerto Rico. And now you have to get your act together yourself. You're no longer in Puerto Rico. On top of the disaster, you've had to move. You have taken our advantage of our encouragement for you to leave Puerto Rico. Leave everything. Come to the United States. We will put you up at a motel. So that would be your base of operations. You can look for work locally. And with that money, you can see to your devastated homes and so forth. Which is, you know, pie in the sky talking. Look how long it took to just get New Orleans back on track after Katrina. So the administration has decided that it would end the housing subsidies this week. What are these people thinking? I'll take a break here, and when we come back, your reactions to this weekend. It's a very interesting weekend. Right after this. listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're taking a look at this weekend and some pretty significant things that happened on the weekend. A large part of it concerns Mexico and Puerto Rico and the Trump administration and policies that are incomprehensible to most people but make perfect sense to Trump and his cronies. But it also was a signal that we really have to get our act together, because the demonstrations illustrated the latent power that we have. We just need to make it actual, and we have to make it real. There are enough people who can transmit their concerns, but we need a lot more power, a lot more firepower in Congress. Jay from New York, your thoughts.
Yes, good afternoon, Eutrice. I hope you're doing well. I'll be very
Thank
quick.
Thank you.
On your observation, and my observation, did you notice with all of the protesting and all of the speech, did you see a concrete plan of moving forward by the members that were protesting, who more than likely were of the Democratic Party? Because I didn't really observe any forward direction and messaging necessary to overtake what's happening, or even put some sort of pushback, honestly, on how to change these policies and then in the process to get the character out of the White House.
I thought that the main purpose of the protests was to make very clear that people were getting ready or are, in fact, already engaged in fighting this administration over the so-called zero-tolerance policy. So it wasn't, to me, it was not a protest meant to discuss the alternatives or solutions. It was most important for the protests to convey to the Trump administration that the policy simply will not be tolerated and people are prepared now to resist it.
Okay, now I could agree with that, but don't you think that there should have been a component on how to move forward and a strategy in place so that people would know what direction to go and what to do?
That in part preceded the protests, but the main thing, which is what I think they accomplished very well, was to demonstrate the universality of agreement on this policy, that it is no good and the administration ought to stop implementing it. And they also conveyed, without a shadow of a doubt, that they're prepared to take this on in a way that the Trump administration did not or does not expect. So I thought that was the overall point. I think,
and do you think
people have been organizing
that they,
on. I'm sorry?
Do you think that they put forward that message to your liking in the manner in which you usually observe things and the analysis that you basically put on things of this nature? Do you think that they laid the good enough groundwork to make someone like yourself want to participate and be happy about the narrative?
I give them great credit for it, because don't forget, prior to the demonstrations, they've already had several across the country, several discussions about what needs to be done. And this includes other groups, other civil rights groups, and other legal groups, in fact, who have very clear ideas, and they've published them, they put them forward as to what needs to be done about the zero tolerance policy. So yes, people have been working on it. But the main point of the demonstration was achieved, which was to put people in the street and to send a signal that this is no longer a matter that will be theoretical. People are putting the pedal to the metal, as they say.
Well, Utrice, if you feel comfortable with it and you think that there's a direction that will come out of it, I'm going to support you and what you're doing and just keep on doing what has to be done in regards to educating the people and trying to put forward some sort of fight back. So they must have done something right if they oppress you enough for you to come on today and give them a halfway thumbs up. Have a good day, sis.
No, I give them a thumbs up. I really do, because the effort showed in the breadth of the protests, more than 70 different protests across the country, more than 100,000 people, and all kinds of people. This was a very impressive aspect of it. All kinds of people were out there in the street. The elderly, students, people from neighborhood organizations. It was a very impressive showing. And the humanity was very impressive too. That's what they were responding to, the humanity, the inhumanity of Trump's policy, but the humanity of regular Americans to say this cannot stand. We cannot be silent when children and parents are being separated. That was a very, very impressive aspect of it. Okay, so Jay is gone. 888-874-4888. When these things happen, protests, you can't expect perfection. But as much as you could demand, it was perfect in that sense. People mobilizing, all kinds of people from all walks of life, from all parts of the country, and saying in one voice, Trump, we're on to you, and we're going to fight you. We're going to fight you on this. We're not letting up, and we're not afraid of you. Great job. That's a great job. So we congratulate people when they do things like that and show a level of humanity even in their struggle. It's very, very important. This was not about bashing anybody's heads in. This was not about cussing anybody out. It was a straight, well-worded notice that we, the people, will have a say in how things are done in this country and how things are done by this country. And one thing we are sure of is that we will not allow you to break up families. We just won't allow you to do that. That's it. I mean, you can't ask for better than that. So when we look at these protests, at least this is what I do, when you look at these protests, you ask questions of yourselves about what is my own politics? You know, what is my own political direction? Am I doing enough? Am I involved? Am I creating change? David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, David.
I've been thinking about the protests and other things that are going on around the world. And I agree that people should protest such an atrocity as implemented by Mr. Trump. And, you know, I think it's a terrible thing. And you have indigenous people coming in from all over this area, and especially crossing a border that is taking them to a land that was stolen from them by the United States government. But, you know, I wonder about people protesting for this, but I didn't hear about any protests like of this magnitude when just recently the apartheid government of Israel was mowing down children, plus men and women, hundreds of them, over there in the territories that they're occupying. I didn't see that kind of thing going on. And you have to say that there should have been a protest, because those things that happened there, mowing down, killing children and men and women, could not happen without the cooperation of the United States. They're in complicit with that type of behavior. I didn't see this type of excitement or demonstration effect with the children of Flint, Michigan, who have been poisoned and will have that damage done by the lead in the water for the rest of their lives. And not only in Flint, Michigan, but in many places in the country. And all the other things that are happening to children all over the country in terms of abuse of children, the poverty of children, the homelessness of children. And, you know, I don't see that type of protest. So there's some things that ring a bell with people. This, you know, taking the children away from their parents and sending them to detention centers and so forth. And that rang a bell. But other things where the results for the children were even worse, which was, you know, death. You know, there's very little excitement about it. So that's what was on my mind as I heard about all the things that were going on with the protests in the last few days. So I feel very strongly about that. And I think people ought to look at this thing. I mean, we had Obama, we had Trump and Bush bombing and killing children left and right in all this warfare, dropping bombs with drones and doing all sorts of things, killing families left and right, and you know, very little protest. No one's saying anything. So this kind of gets me when this type of situation where children are separated from their parents, and that brings a big lot of excitement and protest. But all those other situations where children abuse here and abroad are just totally or near totally ignored.
Well, you make a strong point. And this is the nature of politics and of life. People would react sometimes under specific conditions, and they too have to be conditioned to react to those conditions. So we hear about certain things when people don't see a direct connection to them. We see agitation and we see protest when people feel the issue is palpable, and it incorporates other elements that would bring a broader interest in protest as well. I'm not saying that that is a legitimate thing. I'm just saying that this is how sometimes things unfold.
Right. I understand that. But I feel that people have to learn to take these other things into consideration. In other words, those children over there in the Gaza area are mowed down, people need to learn that could not possibly occur without the permission of the United States. The United States is the one who provides the armaments and the support diplomatically and militarily and socially for them to do those heinous crimes to those Palestinians. And people have to get that into their head and start protesting about those things too, including those so-called black people who are sitting on the black caucus and say nothing. And, you know, this is terrible. And so we have to get more conscious and not only protest children who are separated, but all the children who are murdered left and right by the administrations now and before.
Thank you. I agree with that. Eric from Georgia, you're on the air. Eric, are you there?
A little clip. About the port. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. I have a little clip to play, if you don't mind, about the Portland disaster that happened. And, the characters, I guess the suspicious characters that probably are behind the scenes of orchestrating the whole thing. Here we go.
To me, the video footage,
here we don't go.
And you were on the ground, so you...
Hold it there for a second. No, we don't do that. And it is, you know, a little bit worrisome that you would choose to do it and do it this way. I don't do that. If there's a clip to be played, I have to hear it ahead of time. You don't run this program and you don't choose the editorial content of this program. And we know that we're operating in a world in which people have all kinds of agendas produced by all kinds of organizations with all kinds of intent. That's not going to happen on this program. If you think that there is something that I should hear and consider airing, that's a whole different thing. Then you proceed, you know, with respect, plain and simple, respect. You're not in any way in editorial control of this program. So you're not going to call up and say, hey, look, I have this clip. So you have a clip. What does that mean to me? We have a program that we're proceeding with. If you have something that you would like me to listen to, then send it. But you don't get on the program without any ability to first figure out what it is that you're talking about and whether you are in fact a legitimate organization or person and not one of these provocateurs who would just crash land into a program and air their material and think that that's okay. No, it's exactly the reason I shut down my Facebook page. My Facebook page was supposed to continue the conversation. And soon enough, there are people who posted pictures of them at Pookie's party and doing all kinds of things that the page was not intended. I shut it down. I'm so relieved. So you would pardon my I'm a little bit rigid on this point today, but frankly, you came in in bad form. You don't just come in on the air and say, look, I have a clip, I want to air it, and here it is. No, you don't. You're not running my show. I do that. If you have something that you'd like to share, send it, and I'll evaluate it and decide whether it belongs on the program or it doesn't. But you don't barge in and think that this is okay. It's very disrespectful to the listeners and to me. And it says that you put yourself in charge of our program. You don't have that kind of power. Thanks for your interest. And that brings us to the end of our program today. There's a lot that's going on and that we have to look behind to find the connections to, to issues that we discuss about increasing popular power, the people's power. How do we do that? How do we increase our own ability to influence things? How do we increase our understanding and clarity about things? And how do we proceed if we genuinely believe that we can make a contribution? We can do something to elevate us all. It's the charge that we all have. So when these circumstances come along, kind of move away from the actual, literal expression of whatever it is, and see behind the scenes what could possibly be happening, and you'd be amazed at what we find. Thank you for listening and contributing today. We have coming up next, What in the Cell is Going On? We'll meet each other tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. And we'll talk again. Bye-bye.